Well, welcome back at 3:07, and we were talking a little bit earlier this afternoon about airplanes being delayed because of a software glitch, and then there were some issues with the New York Stock Exchange. Just noticed, what was it I said just off the top? Anonymous might very well claim responsibility, and how would we know that they're not right? And apparently, according to newspapers in the UK, Anonymous is tweeting about being responsible for taking down the New York Stock Exchange. Well, there we go. Now we know. Or do we? Welcome back. Talk in the afternoons here on News 95.7. Lots of reaction to our discussion about the Evolve Festival. We'll share some of that with you coming up a little later on the show. But I did want to share one quick comment. It was a tweet I saw just before we started this afternoon. And you know Frankie McDonald, Frankie the weatherman from Cape Breton, he had posted a picture. People are starting to do this fan art, and they're doing these really cool pictures and photoshopping them. And Frankie had tweeted a picture of himself, and it was raining tacos. And Frankie really liked that picture, so we retweeted it, and I gotta say, it was really kind of cool. One of the folks who tweets us on a regular basis said, as bad as the internet can be, it's nice to see the positive side when a guy like Frankie McDonald gets well-earned accolades. And if Frankie likes it, I can fully support that. And you know what? He says he hates his haters. Well, he doesn't. He just ignores them. And that's a good way to live life. And in the studio here with us this afternoon, very first time ever, Mark Stevenson, managing editor of thetruthaboutcars.com. And it's a pleasure to have you in here. And we don't have to talk about haters today.
Well, thank you for having me, Sheldon.
So you drove down here today. Where's home for you?
I live in Dartmouth.
Oh, so you're actually. Oh, you made that trek, and you didn't say Halifax North. So
no,
we're going to get into that controversy later about whether we need to rename or revert. So you came over from Dartmouth in what were you driving?
Mustang.
You were in a Mustang.
A four cylinder Mustang. It's weird. It's really weird.
You know, I remember back in the day those pony body, the fox body, the ones that looked like a kind of K car. I'm sorry. but rear wheel drive, and I see a lot of them at the racetrack every week. And
so they used to make a four cylinder turbocharged Mustang called the SVO.
SVO. Oh, a buddy of mine had a 76. It looked like a Pinto. It was ugly.
Okay.
It was horrible.
The Mustang 2?
It might very well have been. I don't remember. It was ugly lime green.
It was
green.
Really bad.
It was horrible. It was a horrible car. Oh, ugh. And we were talking earlier. My son had a 96 Mustang, and I spent more time under that car than I did in that car.
Well,
but
almost any car from 1996, you're going to spend under it more time than driving it.
So when did you start writing about cars?
Ooh, that's a good question. I've been at this for 7 years now, I think.
Okay.
7 years.
You started when you were 12.
Hey, I'm not that young.
I'm younger than you. I'm kidding. Yes,
but
you
I'm
are.
Young.
Absolutely.
I'm not that young. But no, I did it as a hobby. I just really love cars. And I started as somebody who just loves driving. Not so much somebody that loved cars, but I just really loved the freedom of driving. And I slowly turned this hobby into a career. And now people read me. I don't know why.
Awesome. No, this
but
is great.
It's great.
No, it is. And I've asked this question of guests who've come in to talk about cars with us. And I've been remiss to say, but the first car, I learned to drive in a 1979 Cutlass Supreme. Mm-hmm. It was the parents' car. The first standard I drove was my stepfather's work truck.
Yes.
It was a 3-on-the-tree, 6-cylinder Ford.
Ooh.
Yeah. But the first car I owned, a friend of mine, we saved up our money and we chipped in together and we were out west, so it was a little different situation. A 1971 Ford Cortina.
Okay.
And somebody calls it, you do know that's a curtain. That means curtain. And I don't know, it's Italian or whatever it was. And that was it lasted till the alternator blew up and it would have cost more than we paid to buy the damn thing.
For an alternator?
Yeah, it was an import. It was a British import. And
oh, right.
Yeah,
right,
so
right.
Nobody wanted anything to do with it. And so I think we sold it for pretty much what we paid for. So what was your first car?
My own first car?
Your very first car, Mark Stevenson.
Ooh, it's bad. It's really bad.
It can't be any worse than a Ford Cortina, man.
Oh, I had a 1990 Sunbird.
Okay, you win.
It was no, really sorry. Bad. It was a hand-me-down, and I bought it for, like, next to nothing.
Yeah.
But the rust in the door The holes were so big you could put your fist through the door while the door was closed and the window was up.
Air conditioning. That's 260
exactly,
air.
Exactly. But the first like fairly new car that I had was just a Civic Si.
Okay.
That was the first one that I bought with real money. And it was a manual. And I think my split automatic and manual has been pretty pretty even.
Okay.
Just depends on what it is.
Now, I've been driving VWs for a while just because I do a lot of driving. And, you know, they drive broken for a long time.
Diesels?
Diesels, yeah. Okay. The one that I, the last car I got rid of, I shouldn't say it that way. I gave it to my son. It had 600,000. It was a 2000 TDI Jetta.
So he inherited your problem.
He inherited every single one of them. Yep. He's so far. And some of them with the car. Sorry. Sorry if you're listening. So, yeah, the whole idea of a stick shift. I've taught several people. In fact, I taught my wife how to drive a standard, and here's how it went. At the time, we were driving it was a Toyota Tercel. We called it a Gazelle. It was a horrible car, too. And it ended up, I got her to drop me off at the radio station I was working at, and I said, there you go. That's how she learned to drive. She wasn't pleased with me. She said she stalled it a bunch of times on the way home, but she can drive a standard now as well as anyone I know. And we're getting to that point, though, in society where people aren't driving standards. I know there are people who just can't.
Yeah, and it's not part of the driving test here.
Right.
That's what blows my mind. If you go to England, that's part of the driving test, unless you do an automatic-only test.
Oh, so you have an endorsement for stick.
Well, the normal license is for stick.
Oh, okay.
But you can request that you only want an automatic only. So you aren't even allowed to drive a stick if you go automatic only.
I get you. Okay.
But, yeah, like I love driving stick just because you feel more connected. There used to be a time when it was more fuel efficient than an automatic.
Depends how you drive it.
Yeah, depending on how you drive it, yep. Of course. Back when, you know, all the automatics were like 3-speed and 4-speed.
Yeah.
But that's not the case anymore.
Now, they've got these, I call them skidoo transmissions, the variable.
No, well, the CVTs, yep. The continuously variable transmissions, which have no gears whatsoever. Yep. And if you ever want to hear a car sound like a sewing machine, drive one with a CVT. But they're incredibly efficient. Same with a lot of these new automated manuals or dual clutch automatics.
Okay.
So inside the guts of them, they're a manual transmission that shifts itself.
Some of the buses that are now being built have those types of transmissions.
Okay. Single clutch usually.
Okay.
So that's why you can still feel the hesitation between the shifts.
Right.
Whereas for the dual clutch gearboxes, there's no hesitation. It just goes bam, 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 goes right through. But yeah, the single clutch, the Ram ProMaster commercial van, diesel engine, has a single clutch automated manual.
Okay.
And you do get that hesitation between the shifts, just like you would in a normal manual with your 1 foot doing the clutch work.
Right. Okay. We're speaking this afternoon, Mark Stevenson, managing editor of The Truth About Cars. We're talking a bit about a question they posed on the website just the other day. I think it was it yesterday I saw that?
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, and the question was, is it time we gave up the Save the Manuals war? We're going to take a break. We're nerding out a little bit on cars this afternoon, and whether or not it's time. Maybe it's time that the manual transmission goes the way of the dodo, or maybe not. We're going to keep this conversation going when we come back in just a few seconds. All right, welcome back at 3:18, almost 3:19, and we're talking cars here this afternoon. Maybe you've got some thoughts on manual transmissions. 902-405-6000, 1-877-801-8255 in the studio with us here this afternoon. We're speaking with Mark Stevenson, managing editor of thetruthaboutcars.com, and question of the day was, is it time we gave up the Save the Manuals war? What kind of reaction are you getting from people? Are they saying, you know what, if I want a standard transmission, I should be able to buy one?
Then go out and buy one, because nobody is.
Is that the problem?
Well, the people that tend to buy manual also tend to buy used.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So if you want a manual and you want them to stay around, go and vote with your dollars. Buy new. And this is not me shilling for the automakers or anything, but, you know, if they need to build them.
And we had a conversation a few weeks ago, and I'm trying to think who I was speaking with. I think it was somebody out west saying that if you wanted a manual transmission now, you go into the dealership, you're going to have to order it, you're going to have to pay more, and you're going to have to wait.
Depends on what it is.
Okay.
If you want like a full-size truck, like an F-150.
Yeah, I suppose.
You can't get them.
You don't. They don't even make those?
They don't even make them anymore. But you're right. For a lot of cars, that's the way it's going. Unless, like yourself, you drive the diesel Volkswagen.
Yeah, they've come with the 6-speed transmission now.
Yeah, yeah. The DSG, which is a twin clutch automatic.
Oh, that's what that... Okay.
Same thing. But if I went down to the Volkswagen dealership right now, I could probably buy a manual diesel because the people who buy diesels tend to skew manual.
It really does surprise me that there are not more. I know GM at one point came out with a diesel model. I know Chrysler with the Jeep Liberty came out with a diesel engine, but that was that whole Daimler Chrysler days.
So they Chrysler still has a diesel. They have it in their light-duty trucks. It's the 3-liter EcoDiesel. They still put it in the Grand Cherokee.
Okay, but those aren't. That's not like the Cummins full-size.
No. Okay. It's a V6 and made in Italy.
Okay. Well, geez. Wonder what that's like to work on.
I don't know.
I'm sure it's a challenge, but really, and I get where you're going with the whole control issue, and I've told, there aren't too many people in my life who I've said, if I could teach you, I could teach you to drive a standard if it's a diesel. Because really, there's so much torque.
Yeah, it really, it's a lot of fun.
And it's just, okay, just find the friction point, you're off. And you know, I would say my son, when I taught him, that was the whole idea was, you know, learn the friction point. It's, don't even put your foot on the gas. If you're not on a hill, you don't even need it.
Which, perfect for diesel.
Yeah.
It's so easy in diesel. You just slide your foot off the clutch. But the Volkswagen made a 5-cylinder gas, a little 5-cylinder 2.5 engine. They put it in the Rabbit before they renamed it Golf again.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that had tons of torque. You could do the same thing with that. But a lot of these new gas engines, the smaller ones, you can't do that. You just need to rev them up before you pull out.
We're getting to that point where there's, you know, dual overhead cams. There's, you know, 4 valves for every cylinder. We've got all this and timing chains, timing belts.
And direct injection, variable valve timing, all this complex stuff that goes into engines. And actually, that's another reason why a lot of manuals don't exist anymore. Because now that the systems are so complex, so computerized, what used to be 10 data points of testing back in the day is now 10,000 data points of testing that you need to do with all these computers and such. So you add another transmission to the mix.
Yeah.
Well, that just doubles that testing load before they can sell the car to you in the dealer.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking with the guy that does my work on my car is saying the newer diesels, there are computer chips in the globe plugs so that it's to the point where everything's computerized. And on one hand, it does help with the mileage. It certainly does help with the fuel efficiency. And perfect example of the control is the Hellcat, right? Because you get two keys, a black key and a red key.
Yeah.
You know, and the only difference is the tuning.
Yeah, yeah. It's all ECU tuning. And the Ford did the same with the previous generation Mustang. I think it was the 302 Laguna Seca. You had the red key and the blue key. It was... But you at least get a manual with that. With the Hellcat, you can't.
We were talking the Dodge Viper that's in town. I don't know if you had a chance.
There was, I did not.
One of the dealers. I don't know if it's sold. It was expensive. I
drove one last year.
And?
Insane.
Not for the road, though.
No, I would drive that on the road, but, you know, you have to have a modicum of self-control.
Well, I can't imagine the roads around here would be any good for
them. No. Yeah, man, I would not want to bend a wheel on a Viper. That's money.
I'm thinking, if you can afford a Viper, though, I guess you're not going to care.
But what's your time worth? You know, it's still time. You still have to get it fixed.
When we're getting to this point where, you know, the debate over a manual transmission versus, and you're saying if we don't start buying them, they're going to be gone. They'll be gone and then we won't be...
I wouldn't say completely gone. Well, Here, great example. We were looking at the BMW website yesterday, but the US one. So they have the M3 and the M5 and the M6. Oh, and they have the M4 now, which used to be the M3, but it's the coupe. And okay. Oh, man, it's a mess. Yeah. Thanks, BMW.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you go and try to configure an M car online, they come standard with a stick still. Mm-hmm. But the configurator automatically checks the automatic option for you. You have to deselect the automatic.
Wow.
In order to get the manual. It's so weird.
It sounds like it is complicated. All right, we're almost out of time.
Sure.
Top Gear, Jeremy Clarkson. Was he right to get gone? I miss.
You know what? I'm
torn.
He's
a cranky old guy.
I'm so torn.
That was his job, though.
He's going to be back.
Well,
Netflix.
Keep waiting. Yeah, I suppose.
Supposedly that there's a deal where they will be on Netflix, all three of them, working together, not Top Gear. So they're going to be back.
And bye-bye BBC.
And bye-bye BBC. But Chris Evans, who is a top radio jock in the UK, morning guy, he is going to be the new host of the new Top Gear. And
it's going to be just like the American one. Horrible.
No, he's a car guy. My fingers are crossed.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, it's great to have a car guy in the studio, and so much. So pleased for this. Mark Stevenson, thank you so much for this. The website is called?
TheTruthAboutCars.com.
Fabulous. Thanks. We're going to have to do this again. Lots of fun talking cars, and we'll nerd out again sometime in the future.
Man, I'd love to be back. All right. This is great. Thanks.
All the best to you, and we're going to take away. Put my mic back on. We're going to take a few seconds, come back in just a few moments as we continue our program. And I lost my sheet. Where is it? All right, here. We'll be chatting in just about 15, 20 minutes time with Councillor Glory McCluskey. She'll be responding to the explanation of the unbranding of Dartmouth. And we'll hear as well from Sheila Sperry when we return. Wait for it. All right, 3:36. Lots of feedback to our earlier conversation with the folks involved with the Evolve Festival and with John Lohr, the Progressive Conservative member from Kings North. We'll share some of those. They're still dealing with that major outage of the New York Stock Exchange, and as we told you earlier, Anonymous is claiming responsibility for whatever computer glitch it was that had them halting trade on the floor of one of the world's largest markets. We started our program talking about wildfire and folks from Nova Scotia heading out west. We're going to end the day with a conversation with Dan Bedell at Red Cross. A number of Nova Scotians and others from the Maritimes are headed out, from Atlantic Canada to be more precise, to help out with the evacuations in Saskatchewan. Just seeing here that the Governor General of Canada will be headed to Regina later today to show their support for those who have been affected by the devastating wildfires, and the thousands of people have been forced from their homes because of that. All right, now 3:50, 10 minutes away from 4 o'clock. This issue has been simmering for some time, and it yesterday came to light that, according to Way Mason, he had been receiving a number of people who were wondering about the name Dartmouth and how it is apparently being erased from the community. And what does this mean? He says it's really not what it appears. It is not some agenda to do harm to the reputation or the name and to erase it. But let's find out from Councillor Glory McCluskey her thoughts, and she joins us on the line here this afternoon. Councillor McCluskey, what are people saying to you about the Sullivan's Pond and some of the other signs that have been changed?
First of all, I have a message for Councillor Mason. He'd do well just to answer his own emails and his phone calls, and just to let the people of Dartmouth decide how they want signs in Dartmouth. I'm hearing a lot from the residents. I had 145 Facebook messages last night. People, when the province gave to the newly created amalgamated area the moniker Halifax Regional Municipality, legally that's still the name. Mm-hmm. This branding named it Halifax, and the branding was for the purpose of marketing this area internationally and nationally. Nobody has any problem with that, because Halifax is known around the world, and that's not a problem. But it's when residents have been promised, You will never lose your identity. That came at amalgamation, and that came again at this branding. You'll keep your identity. Drive up Windmill Road. Look at the park that the politicians of the day and the residents created, the best park east of Montreal. Look at the sign going up Wright Avenue, Burnside Business Park, with a huge Halifax right below it. Waymeson hasn't seen that, I guess. That's how people feel. How would you feel if you worked hard to create something and then have the name changed? The branding, there is no reason for this. You drive down Eastern Shore, Sheet Harbor, with a big Halifax underneath it. Ecom Secom, with a Halifax underneath it. I had a call from an email from a man in Beaver Bank today, really complaining about the nice sign they used to have and what it looks like now with Halifax on it.
The balance, the number of councillors from Dartmouth for compared to the rest of the municipality, it sounds as though perhaps as strong a voice as Gloria McCluskey has, you're in the minority when it comes to getting this message across.
We don't know. I just had a call from Beaver Bank complaining. We don't know what the people of Bedford, what the people of Sackville, what the people of outlying areas like that will have to say about it when they see the signs going up.
Would you like to see it that the word Halifax, that brand, that logo not appear on the signs?
That logo's even confusing to school kids, young kids who are learning to spell. Are they going to start spelling Halifax that way?
With an upside-down V?
Yeah. It's very confusing. To me, it was very stupid. I didn't vote for the branding. We spent that much money for that, and I've seen it on TV with businesses having the same type of brand with the A's upside down V's. When people went down to our Sullivan's Pond, our beautiful Sullivan's Pond, and saw a huge Halifax sign, they were very upset. And I don't blame them. And first thing you'll see when you're coming in the highways, Dartmouth, Halifax. There's no reason to be throwing that in the faces of the residents who worked hard and spent a lot of money getting what we have here in Dartmouth.
Would there be perhaps...
What purpose does it serve?
Would perhaps the Dartmouth Business Association or another organization like that, would you recommend maybe they put up other signs?
I don't know. I haven't talked to... I had a call from a business in Burnside Park who was not happy with it. I was downtown today, and three or four people sitting there who don't live downtown Dartmouth were not happy about the sign change. Could you tell me what purpose it serves to be going around putting up new signs? Why Halifax has to be on the sign?
Some are saying, though, the old sign said Halifax Regional Municipality.
Exactly. That's what the province gave us. And people accepted that because everybody had that. You know, not everybody wanted amalgamation. A lot of us didn't. But we accepted Halifax Regional Municipality. It was on all the signs. But when you take that off and you just put Halifax, that's not the name of the municipality. And to me, to throw that in the faces of people, Dartmouth people are very proud people, as I would suggest Bedford people are and Sackville people. And when you start taking away their identity, and it's okay for Waymeson. Waymeson got very hot-headed recently when his community council voted for a development that he was against. He threatened them all that he'd never support anything they had. So he gets very hot-headed when it comes to something in his district. So stay over their way and look after your side of the harbor.
She's a counselor on Halifax Regional Municipal Council.
And
Gloria McCluskey is the representative for Dartmouth. Gloria, thank you.
You're welcome.
All the best to you.
All right, thanks.
We're going to keep this conversation going. We're going to talk about this with our Municipal Matters panel coming up in just a few moments. I'm sure there are some strong opinions on either side of it. And when we return after the news, it will be Tim Bousquet and Jacob Boone. And we'll take on the Dartmouth naming issue, among others.